This is a Federal News Network podcast.
At the IRS, like a lot of large agencies, procurement, technology, and mission are all tied together. Now the IRS has a new Deputy Chief Procurement Officer, someone with long federal and private sector experience. Guy Torres joins me now in studio. Guy, good to have you in.
Great to be here. Thanks, Tom.
And let's begin with the fact that you are the Deputy Chief Procurement Officer. How do you divide the duties between you and the Chief Procurement Officer?
Great question, Tom. So in many cases, the Chief Procurement Officer is the senior procurement executive who's really charting the strategic needs and strategic vision for the organization, while I am actually, as a deputy, trying to carry out those expectations as well as handle the tactical contracting operations procurement needs that we see day to day within the organization.
And you came into the IRS just a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago, and did you slip into something that was kind of quietly going along and you could take your time getting up to speed, or was it jumping into white water?
It was jumping into cold white water, actually, Tom. It was 3 months drinking from the fire hose, multiple fire hoses, to be honest with you. A lot of challenges, a lot of changes happening right now at the IRS. So we're trying to bring best procurement actions, best procurement practices to this group to support the multiple missions that we're seeing ahead of us here at the IRS.
And two of the big areas, one, there is the digitization office, and they say not digitizing, but digitalizing, and they make that distinction there of going on for the whole area of customer service. Then there is the longstanding modernization of the back office systems, the master data file system, and so forth. Are you involved with procurements related to those? Because those seem to be like front and center.
Yeah, those are going to be the priorities right now, as you see within the IRS. Trying to make the organization faster, quicker, giving the taxpayer a better customer experience at the same time, providing enforcement capabilities to deter the fraud as well as the identity theft issues that are actually happening right now facing the American taxpayers. So those are absolutely on point for what we're trying to do, and having IT modernization will enhance those capabilities that we need to deliver.
And what are these missions and these groups doing this type of work telling you they need from the procurement function?
So what they need from the procurement function, Tom, is a desire to provide faster, quicker, agile, and innovative procurement solutions keep pace with technology. So my job is to try to deliver those services at the same time, maintain the procurement integrity of the federal procurement process, ensure we are exercising contracting actions that are in the best interest of the public good.
And one of those functions, the digitalization office, has some 14 contracts on the street. They're waiting for delivery of goods under those. And they were all executed, the contracts, in a period of weeks. And that's interesting because the IRS does not have other transaction authority like a lot of agencies do. So you pretty much do everything through the FAR. And yet they were able to demonstrate how fast you can get contracts for crucial projects onto the street. So tell us about the idea of speed and the need for speed, which is something coming from the administration quite often in a lot of domains, how that comes down to procurement when you don't have OTA and you've just got the FAR.
So, again, we're trying to find innovative ways through the FAR, actually, to maintain procurement integrity and deliver procurement services and goods while keeping pace with technology, because technology is evolving, right? And we need to continue to have technology to support our missions. So we're finding creative ways, legal within the realm of FAR, and provide execute. You know, as opposed to being risk averse, we want to be proactive and try to lean forward to provide those best practices that we feel can help the customer, which in our case is the CIO to other organizations within IRS.
Sure. And of course, the FAR is a pretty flexible document. It's like a violin. You just have to know how to play it.
Play it well, right? But make mistakes, but play it well. And it's about practice and practice and practice, Tom.
And you can always put in a new string if you break one.
Yes.
We're speaking with Guy Torres. He is recently appointed the new Deputy Chief Procurement Officer at the IRS. And let's talk about you for a minute. You have been in government. You've done procurement. You had a stint at Customs and Border Protection, another agency that has really yanked itself into the digital age through at least one project I'm familiar with, is to automate the dozens, scores, maybe hundreds of forms that it puts out for people that it encounters. What did you learn there, and how does that help the IRS work?
When I was at CBP, I was fortunate to be managing the largest IT acquisition portfolio in DHS. It represented 40% of our annual budget, about $1.5 billion at that time. And when I was at CBP, the IT modernization effort that was happening at CBP is very similar to what I'm experiencing here at IRS and actually prepared me very well for what I'm expecting to happen here at the IRS as we lead IT modernization. And the key takeaways I had when I was at CBP that helped us be successful was our ability to partner upfront and early with our program office to help them define their requirements, as well as provide active and engaging industry transparency, which was helping provide best solutions and continued collaboration with industry that would help deliver those requirements that we needed.
And the more you can do that, I guess, the more agile the whole thing can become, in a way paralleling the agile development methodology of the projects themselves. Fair enough?
Yes.
All right. And you don't like to pick the easy agencies. You also had roles at the Marine Corps, also at the FBI. Tell us a little bit about those.
Oh, they were just fantastic opportunities. So I was fortunate to be commissioned in the Marine Corps and was in the Marine Corps for over 10 years. And when I retired out of the Marine Corps, I was fortunate to get an opportunity to work as a unit chief within the FBI. And it was fantastic working with a great law enforcement agency.
All right. And on the private sector side, I'm looking at your biography. Mm-hmm. You were DHS, Homeland Security Account Executive at Northrop Grumman. Mm-hmm. That is a big job. How did that inform your understanding of what it's like from the government side to deal with industry, having to deal with government from the industry side?
Great question, Tom. And I think it actually helped me have a better appreciation and deeper understanding of how important it is for the government to define their requirements. When I realized when I was in the private sector, you get an understanding if there's vagueness and this requirement ambiguity, I realized that on the industry side, we end up spending a lot of money, a lot of time in terms of cost of doing business, of trying to define what does the government really want. So the takeaway I received from that was, in my current job now, my goal is to ensure that we, on the Office of Procurement Operations, that we do a better job with our program managers, partner with them to help define and refine that requirement, as well as to be able to communicate in a way that makes sense and it's simple and less complicated. Because if you make it less complicated, it's easier for the industry to understand it and to provide you a solution that makes sense and supports mission. So that's what my end of mind is there.
But if you are, say, specifying or setting requirements for replacement jack screws for an airplane aileron, then you can provide a drawing and it's very detailed and the threading on the screws and so forth. How do you translate that precision in requirements to something like, we want to improve customer experience using these forms and automate these forms?
Well, when you're looking at a more open need, open requirement, part of the engagement with industry will be to have an active give and take, an active engagement with industry on multiple levels, multiple times to help provide information, offer information, as well as seek information from industry, and then bring in industry to provide those additional requirements and help us define it. We're doing that now in many cases on the IT modernization effort. You'll see more of that in the future, is when we will solicit information to obtain ideas and help us help define these requirements, because we know where we want to go, but maybe we need to tweak it in terms of how we get there. And we would love to have industry's input, because they are going to be our partner in our success, right? Is industry engagement and having them be a partner with us as we move forward.
And is it also important to convince the program owners that maybe don't try to buy the whole thing all at once, but pick your increments with that end goal in mind? Because that seems to be the trend, too, also, to get away from the grand design types of failures.
You mentioned working with the program managers, and another one of our goals within the Office of Procurement Operations is to ideally become that credible, trusted advisor to the program manager and the program officer, so we are a force multiplier as opposed to being an impediment or a roadblock in the supply chain.
And after 3 months, do you like it at the IRS?
I really do. It's a great question, right? I'm laughing as you say that, because I do like it. And what I like about it is the people. The people are dedicated. The people are focused. The people want to make a difference. And it's a great place to be right now.
Guy Torres is Deputy Chief Procurement Officer at the IRS. Thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure.
We'll post this interview at federalnewsnetwork.com/Federal Drive. Hear the Federal Drive on your schedule. Subscribe at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your shows.
Hello, and welcome to the Lessons in Leadership podcast. I am your host, Shane Canfield, CEO of WEPA. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Vice Admiral Cutler Dawson. Cutler has had an incredible career serving our country for 35 years in the Navy, where he attained the rank of Vice Admiral. And during his service, he had numerous assignments afloat and ashore, including Commander, Second Fleet, Striking Fleet Atlantic, and in Washington at the Pentagon and on Capitol Hill, where he was the Navy's Chief of Legislative Affairs. Immediately following his retirement from active duty in 2004, he became the president and CEO of Navy Federal Credit Union, the world's largest credit union, where he served for 14 years. Under his leadership, Navy Federal grew from 2 million to 8 million members. Phenomenal. Cutler, welcome and thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Shane.
You've had a fascinating career across both military and the private sector. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background and your professional journey?
Well, I started out at the Naval Academy, where I graduated in 1970, and then, as you mentioned, spent 35 years in the Navy with six actual afloat commands. The first one was when I was 27 years old. I didn't know enough to be scared of anything, and it was probably one of the highlights of my career. And then after I retired after 35 years, I went to work at Navy Federal Credit Union as the CEO, where I spent my next 14 years. I'm currently retired and enjoying life, and it's been a great run for me.
How would you describe your leadership style and how's that developed over the years?
My style has been quite consistent. I believe, and I've learned this in the Navy, that you have to go to the deck plates to see what is going on. And you have to learn what your people do and how they do it so you can help them to be better at it and more efficient and more productive. It's something that you need to do all the time. I remember I used to tell folks that you don't want to retreat to your cabin. And what I mean by that is the longer you're in a position, the less you think you have to get out and about. But that should be the opposite. You should get out and about more because people change, situations change, and you've got to figure out a way to get to them and find out what they're doing and what you can do to help them.
We'll talk a little bit more about your book, but I read it, From Sea to the C-Suite. Fantastic read. You talk about the deck plates in that as well. I would encourage everyone to get a copy of this and read some more detail about going to the deck plates. Cutler, who was the most impactful leader in your life and what quality did you admire about them?
I had numerous while I was in the Navy, but the quality that I enjoyed the most was the leaders that got to know me as an individual. And that they cared about me, and I could tell that they cared about me. And they were not only my leaders, but they were my mentors. And I remember one particular one, Bill Schiffer, when I had my first assignment at the Pentagon. I would go in to see him with my problem of the day, and I knew that he had numerous problems of his own, but he would stop and he would focus on me, and he would make me feel like I was the most important person in his world. And I tried to do that throughout my career, but really it's about caring for your people.
Cutler, in reading your book, there was a quote you used that you used to inspire those people that work for you. And it really got my attention. And it was, you are the captain of your own ship. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what that means and how it was useful to you and the leaders you were developing.
Absolutely. What I mean by captain of your own ship, when you are the captain of a ship, sometimes you're in the middle of the ocean and you don't have anybody to turn to make decisions. You don't have anybody to turn to ask, what should I do now? You have to be the captain of that ship. And I translated that into, let's say, Navy Federal's organization, where I would tell branch managers that I said, you are the captain of the ships of Navy Federal. You're the ones that are facing the members or customers, as others call them, every day. And you have to make decisions without a lot of guidance in some cases and without a lot of time. So be the captain of your own ship. Step up, make decisions, do what you think is right, and you never can go wrong.
I think that is so important. And you have to give your people a little bit of latitude to take some risk as well, because there is risk for them in doing that and risk to your organization.
That's right. And I mentioned that I took command of my first ship with 5 years in the Navy, and I was 27 years old. Well, my boss had 32 years in the Navy, his guidance to me when I first met him was, Cutler, you do the right thing and I'll back you up all the way. What a wonderful way to spend an assignment with backup and guidance like that.
What great advice. It's clear leadership is a topic you're passionate about. You wrote the book we mentioned before, From C to C-Suite. Can you tell us a little bit about that project?
Yes. When I was at Navy Federal, I would tell sea stories as parables to get my point across. And folks would tell me, Cutler, we like your stories. It gives us a picture of what you're trying to tell us. Now, what else are they going to say? They work for me, but I took it as a compliment, and it was. And my wife encouraged me to write a book, and I needed a co-author to help me. And I found a lady named Taylor Keelan, who was the perfect co-author. She turned in my stories into wonderful chapters that I'm very proud of.
Where can listeners find a copy?
Well, you can get it on Amazon, and you can also get it on the Naval Institute website. And I might add that any proceeds from the book, Navy Federal uses to give to charity.
Fantastic. Cutler, thank you very much. Really enjoyed your time and your lessons in leadership and sharing with us your life story. And I've learned a lot both from talking to you today and reading your book. And thank you very much for your time.
It's my pleasure. And I would like to add one thing if I could, Shane. During my assignments in Washington, D.C., I gained the utmost respect for the civilians that work here every day. They're hardworking, they're dedicated, and they have my eternal gratitude. I got to come and go from the Pentagon. They stayed every day and worked in Washington when I got to go out and enjoy being at sea.
Perfect, thank you. Yeah, WAPA serves civilian federal employees, but your comment is well taken because the interaction between the two is continuous, it's nonstop, and it's critical. So the career civil servants, as well as career military, our country would not be where it is today without them.
I totally agree. And I can tell you from the U.S. Navy standpoint, we couldn't operate like we do without them being the backbone of what we do.
Thank you very much for your time today, Cutler, and to everyone listening to Lessons in Leadership podcast. We'll see you next time.